Who needs an alarm in the morning when McDonald's has sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and a breakfast cutoff? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Everyone deserves a chance in the driver's seat. For GM and Revolt, that means leading the way on the road to an all-electric future and envisioning a world with zero crashes, zero tailpipe emissions, and zero congestion. GM's committed to making EVs accessible for everybody. That means you too. So what are you waiting for? GM's got the keys. You grab the wheel. Learn more about an all-electric future and the 000 initiative at GM.com. GM, everybody in.
Welcome to another episode of Pop Law Podcast. I am your host, Desiree, and I'm still not your attorney. We're closing out Women's History Month with a second episode of the interview series. Another special guest, Miss Daniela Jones. Daniela Jones is Associate Counsel, Media and Marketing at Peloton. Yes, Peloton, the bike that we all need to get on to get right for summer now that the world is opening up. But forget about us. Back to Daniela. Daniela has been honored as a 2020 Rising Star to Watch by Diverse Representation. Prior to joining Peloton, Daniela was counsel at Endeavor, where she supported the 160 over 90 creative agency business. In this capacity, Daniela analyzed and assessed the business and legal risks associated with the entertainment marketing sector. Before entering entertainment, marketing, and technology, Daniela was an associate based in the New York City office at Cleary Law Firm. Her practice focused on complex corporate transactions, particularly real estate finance. In addition, Daniela has been a pioneer and disruptive advocate for diversity, inclusion, and equity. While at Cleary, Daniela served as head of the Black Infinity Group and founded a meditation programming series for associates and partners that is still ongoing and has been expanded firm-wide. While at Endeavor, Daniela co-founded Endeavor's first-ever employee resource group, Endeavor Black Collective, and during her two-year tenure as a board member, worked with senior management and C-suite executives to establish a diversity and inclusion function across Endeavor's portfolio of companies such as WME, IMG, and Endeavor Content, including programming, recruiting, and retention initiatives, mentorship programs, and business development opportunities with Black-owned brands and businesses. Daniela received her JD from NYU and her BA in communications from University of Pennsylvania with a minor in Africana Studies. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Daniela Jones.
Daniela, say hi to the people.
Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here, Daniela. It's been, you know, a crazy March, but it is Women's History Month. So I definitely wanted to close out Women's History Month with you in particular. And we're coming off the hinge of Black History Month, and I know how passionate you are about Black people and Black creatives, and so it was a great second episode to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I love that you have this platform to help uplift people, specifically Black creatives.
Yeah, so that's an easy question. I have two that are top of mind as my two favorite campaigns to work on. The first one is during my time here at Peloton, and had an opportunity to work on the Peloton collaboration with Beyonce, also in partnership with 10 historically Black colleges and universities. I mean, that's self-explanatory. You understand why that's one of my favorites. And my second, while I was at Endeavor, I had the opportunity to work on a Coca-Cola campaign focused on 6 women athletes during the 2019 Women's World Cup. And what I loved about that campaign was that it was very global in scope. And they specifically included an athlete from Nigeria. And, you know, we talked about, you know, my passion for just my Blackness and being a part of the diaspora. And I love that they were intentional about including the diaspora outside of just like a U.S. centric standpoint.
That's amazing. I love that you said that Blackness is not U.S. centric, and I think sometimes people forget about that. So it's great that, you know, the company thought to
reach beyond Black people in the U.S. And of course, you know, sometimes I say that this podcast moonlights as a Beyonce podcast / Fyre Festival. So, you know, I'm all here for the Beyonce anything, and I'm an HBCU graduate. So when I saw that Peloton brand campaign collaboration come out, you know, I text you. I'm like, Daniela, obviously we can't get into the weeds of that, but, you know, I think those are two really great examples of Black brand collaborations with huge companies, and it's amazing that you got to be a part of those.
Yeah, I feel quite blessed to have had the opportunity to work on both of these projects. You know, I started at Cleary doing real estate finance, so it was a bit of a full circle moment for me to be able to do in my professional capacity things that are near and dear to my heart on a personal level. The intersection of passion and work is really one I feel blessed to have had.
I think that's so important. Just loving what you do and finding who you are as an attorney and being able to just do good work and do work that you're passionate about makes your job so much easier. Brand partnership. What are brand partnerships from your perspective? One, you know, working as a lawyer, and then, you know, you work with all the business teams. What is brand partnership to you?
Yeah, so when I think of a brand partnership, you know, it can range in scope, right? So essentially what it is that you're working with a brand in any certain capacity. So whether or not you're doing a social media campaign by posting, whether or not you're collaborating with a brand to create specific content or to help cultivate and execute on a product, there isn't a particular bucket that brand partnerships falls into. What it really is the marriage between you, whether or not that's like in your capacity as an influencer or through a brand that you may have, coming together with a larger brand and partnering in some capacity. And so, yeah, that's my concept of a brand partnership. It doesn't fall neatly into one place, but it's any wide range of services or collaborations you may be entering into with another brand.
We'll talk about brand partnerships and collaborations, or they want to be an influencer or work with certain brands, but there's so many different things that you can do. And like you said, it's not one area. And so I remember working with the Creative Collective, and I think you were at Endeavor at this time. And so we, you know, I'll just use the general term brand partnership, collaborated with them to do, I think, some VIP room, the VIP room with Martell, and you were mm-hmm. working with Martell at that time. And so, you know, for us, and even outside of that, when I think of a brand partnership for me personally, is it something that, does a company stand for what I stand for? Can I get behind this? Can I be affiliated with this? And, you know, how am I going to look to my peers, to people in the media? And then will I be okay with this brand partnership later? Is that something that you feel people as creatives should think of as well? I know sometimes lawyers, we overthink things, but, you know, a creative who's not a non-lawyer, should those be consideration?
For sure. You know, I think authenticity is at the core of all of this. You have to consider whether or not, you know, it makes sense for you to partner with a brand. So does the brand's product or service offering map well with your audience? Does the brand have the same values as you, right? Like, and what I've found is that, you know, when authenticity is really at the center of the conversation, there's alignment on both sides, so that whatever comes out of this marriage between the brand, both brands, or the brand and the influencer, just tends to be much more organic when everyone's on the same page. You know, you have the brand's creative team will be oriented similarly to you and your creative vision when authenticity is always in the room. It's kind of like, it's like any other relationship, right? Like, what makes sense for your selection of a friend or a partner, I think a lot of that rationale plays into deciding which brands you should partner with.
I think that's so important. And then, you know, people not getting blinded by the money, because sometimes a brand and throw so much money at you, and people might take it because they're just looking at the dollars and sign the agreement, and then, you know, might see the creative that comes out with that brand and want to back away from it. You know, we on the show have discussed lawsuits with different influencers partnering with brands and not fulfilling commitments for whatever reason. And a lot of the times it tended to be because they just looked at the money and they didn't like the direction of that brand campaign. But I feel like you kind of knew who they were in the beginning.
I mean, listen.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Honey talks, right? And I totally get it. Especially for creatives right now, we're in the midst of an unprecedented pandemic. Who knows when the end is in sight, and folks need to get paid. So I totally understand that. I think that there's ways that you can be smart about it, right? Like when you're negotiating these partnership or collaboration agreements, are you building in creative approvals as a bit of a safety control, right? Like, do you have input on the final work product or content or whatever comes out of the collaboration? Does your say carry beyond just getting your money back? Do you have right to give feedback? And I think there's ways to be intentional and smart about it so that even when you're going after that money bag, you're not jeopardizing yourself in the long run and won't end up in a situation where, you know, you got paid, but then a brand is using your likeness in a way that you didn't intend them to, or the collaboration is taking a turn that you didn't see or that you didn't want. So you got to be smart when you're thinking about negotiating these agreements.
Daniela, you hit the head on the nose on the head, something. This whole month I've been saying some of my mom's old little things. I'm like, gosh, I'm getting old. Turn it into my mother. But, you know, I would definitely want to dive a little bit deeper into that. You spoke about creative approvals. And so that's an important provision in these brand partnerships. And, you know, we can talk about it from the influencer perspective in this go around. Like, what are some other provisions that our creative should look for when they have these brand partnership agreements?
Yeah, there's so many things that you should be concerned with when negotiating these agreements. But the first one that comes to mind is, well, what are the services, right? What's the ask here? What are you doing for the brand? Are you producing content? Are you like working with their team to collaborate on something? What exactly are you doing? And, you know, if you think about like content, or rather, sorry, social posts as an example, does the fee match up with the labor required to get the services done, right? Like, you know, I'm no influencer. I mean, what I have about like 1,000 followers, so maybe micro influencer, but from my little time on Instagram, I know that it takes time, right? It takes time to take pictures, to get the filter right. It takes time to make sure that there's no third party logos in the background of the picture, that there's no one in the picture that you don't have appropriate release from, that you can actually produce clearable content. And so you need to make sure that the rate that you're being paid aligns with the amount of effort and time it will take for you to provide the services.
Yeah, I would definitely want to add to that. When we're talking about bagging how much you're getting paid, as Daniela said, the services and creating content, like, do you have to buy any equipment to create this content? Are you bringing in other people to help you shoot it? And do you have to pay them? If that's the case, you need to add that additional money, you know, to what you're getting. That's a fee for production services, because now this is a whole production if you're not just doing it with your camera phone. So ask for more money for that.
For sure. And I would even say, like, when you start to get talent, collaborate more than like a micro influencer, they're paying for the stylist, they're paying for the makeup artist, they're paying Whoever needs to be there.
The nails. I know you yes. love nails. They're paying for nails.
They're paying for it all. They're building in the overhead that they need to get this into the fee or the budget. So it's not like a net thing, because what ends up happening if you don't do that, you get your fee, but then like you're saying, you minus out all of the stuff, put out all the expenditure, and then you're like, wait a second, after tax, what did I get here?
Right. That's definitely a great point, and I think some people need to think about them, particularly as Black creatives and Black influencers, because you know, our budget for hair, nails, makeup is not the same as a person who is not Black. So you can't tell me, here, go $500 for hair, makeup, nails. Like, my hair at least costs $500 to get done. And nails, a good $150. Makeup, a good $150. So, I mean, and that's on the low end. So if you're doing something, particularly if you're a major talent and it's going to be used for a long time, I think, you know, I need at least $2,000. For, you know, maintenance, making myself look presentable.
Listen, it's not cheap to look like this. So someone got to figure it. It should be included in your fee.
The next thing I would say is, you know, how long are you allowing the brand to use your likeness? Now, when I say your likeness, I mean, you know, your name, your biographical information, your voice, anything that really is affiliated with you, that's your likeness. So the question is, how long are you allowing the brand to use it? And you know, every company's go-to is going to be, they want the right to use your likeness
in perpetuity. We told them this on the last episode.
So the question is, are you okay with that? Again, does the fee warrant that long of a usage? Or, you know, should you be narrowing it down to requesting that the license to use your likeness be limited just to the term of the agreement? And I think, you know, we got to talk about this in light of COVID, is force majeure, right? Force majeure is essentially an act of God, right? So anything that happens that's outside of either party's or any party's reasonable control. So, you know, the question is, and especially this came up at the top of the pandemic when no one saw this coming, and, you know, you had all of these experiential activations and live events coming up, is, so what happens if an event gets canceled? What if you've commenced services? Do you get your coin? So it's a consideration in thinking about, you know, how that section is drafted and how it ties into you getting your fee, even in the event a force majeure occurs.
Right. Force majeure, yes, everywhere. COVID, you know, some people and companies, and if the person is savvy, try to tie in, you know, force majeure to payment. Like, you know, if the brand gets canceled, we don't got to pay. I wouldn't necessarily go for that.
And, you know, if you take force majeure even further from an influencer perspective, if you have all these agreements in place, right, because you need multiple streams of revenue, if all the force majeure provisions aren't in your favor, that could wipe you out completely. So it's something to be cognizant of. And honestly, force majeure was a pretty standard provision that no one really paid attention to before COVID-19. But now it's on the main stage and it's not going away. So always, always pay attention to the force majeure provisions.
Or even a termination provision in an agreement, the different ways that a brand can terminate. If you say, the campaign is going in a different direction, so we're terminating this agreement, that's fine, but do you have protection to still get paid?
Right, right. And further to your point about termination, it's another section that's usually in these agreements, the morals clause, right? And so the morals clause essentially says that if you do something that reflects poorly on the brand, the company has a right to get out of the agreement. Now, one thing that I don't think a lot of creatives realize is that you can ask for a reciprocal morals clause, right? Such that if the brand does something or gets in the media for any type of controversy or anything that would poorly reflect upon your image or your brand, you would have the right to get out of the agreement as well. So it would be a mutual termination right tied to this morals clause. Are you going to make each other look bad? And if that happens on either end, you get an out.
And that's why it's important to have an attorney be able to look at these for you, because I think a lot of people miss that reciprocal morals clause. To be honest, I mean, I do influencer agreement, talent agreements all day. I can't say that I've ever had anybody push back on a morals clause to make it reciprocal.
Honestly, you rarely see it.
We're not your lawyer.
It really takes a seasoned eye to look into the agreement, get in the weeds, and call out these issues, such as like asking for a reciprocal morals clause, because it's just not intuitive, and you wouldn't know as a layperson.
Yeah, you know what? And that just made me think about, and obviously I have no insight into this agreement, but do you remember when G-Eazy had that, he was supposed to have a brand collaboration with H&M, but H&M came under flat for those t-shirts about monkeys and a black little boy modeling these monkey shirts and something. And so I remember listening to G-Eazy's interview on The Breakfast Club. I like him as a rapper, and he's from the Bay, so I gotta throw that out there, you know. He was like, yeah, I pulled from that campaign. I'm not working with H&M anymore because, you know, I'm a rapper, number one. I'm from the Bay. And he felt like it was a racist act by, or just, and if, even if he didn't go so far, because I can't recall, I mean, I put words in my mouth, a racist act. It looked bad on H&M. And he didn't mess with it. And he felt like it would look bad on him if he continued this partnership, particularly as a white man who is in a black community.
Right. And I'm sure he was able to do so only because he had that reciprocal morals clause. I think The Weeknd had a similar situation where he got out of a deal with the brand, and I'm presuming it's on the basis of this morals clause. And, you know, morals clause aside, you always have to be thinking about termination rights in general, right? So if the day comes that you want to break up with this brand, how do you go about doing that? What's the process? What does that mean for your fee? What does that mean for services rendered or unrendered? It kind of will cover the full context of what happens, but you should always be thinking about, okay, worst case scenario, if I want to exit, do I have a right to do so? And how do I go about doing that?
Every brand has their own scale of what they pay influencers and who they consider micro and macro influencers. So we can't really give you insight into what those numbers are. I get those questions all the time. It's brand by brand. Do you agree with that, Daniela?
It's for sure brand by brand, right? It's a very custom concept and metric, because each brand is going to have a different audience or niche area that they're looking to target. So one brand may want that macro influencer with millions of followers. Another may want a bit of a micro influencer who has a smaller audience base, but it more so overlaps directly with who that brand's targeted audience is. So it really varies. And I think at the core of that, it's again, this concept of authenticity. Like I said before, it's the word of the hour. Is this an authentic collaboration? In the sense of, does this influencer genuinely map well with who the brand is? And would it be something that feels authentic to that brand's targeted audience? So there's no one size fits all here. It's very brand specific.
Daniela, you know, she's mentioning authenticity, and we've mentioned the different provisions in the agreement that you can look for when you're trying to figure out the number. Think about all the expenses that you have to pay out again, and if that number makes sense. And I'm a firm believer of never go with the first offer that they give you. Like, rebuttal, come back with something. I don't know. Sometimes I like to say double, triple it and see what happens and hit me somewhere. Now, that is not the blueprint to do it, but I like to take risk a little bit.
Listen, you always have to ask for more money. Closed mouths don't get fed. And you know, what I've found is that no party, no matter what side of the table you're on, goes out with their best offer, right? That they may say best and final, but it's never the case. So I always say ask for more in every scenario.
One term that I like to kind of use, and this is a new term to me, is, you know, if you don't feel comfortable going out with a number to come back to them to, ask if this is the end of band. So they know their bandwidth and how far they can go with a certain number. So yeah, just ask, is this end of band? Because you, and just ask that. Yeah, you don't need to explain anymore. They know what that means.
Let me write that down. I didn't have that one in my toolkit. End of band.
And you know, another thing that I always tell folks, and this is honestly not just limited to creatives, I tell all my mentees this also, like on an individual basis and just negotiating their employment offers, is if you're not comfortable with like one particular number, like sort of like a cash base, you can always say like, hey, I'm flexible as to how we get to this point all in, and be creative with modes of payment, right? You know, there's that Beyonce lyric, pay me in equity.
Everybody loves McDonald's fries. So yes, you accused your mom of stealing some of your fries on the way home. But the bag did feel a little light. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
There's other ways to get paid aside from just cash. So it could be equity. It could be value in kind. It could be like, you know, trading services. There's ways to get what you want out of any business transaction that aren't limited to just the final cash number. So be creative when you're thinking about what your payment looks like.
Say you're doing a clothing campaign, ask if you can keep the clothes at the end of the campaign if you really like them. Or, you know, if it's makeup or something, ask if you can keep all that other type of stuff, because that's money too. As Danielle said, equity, the flat payment, you know, them paying for hair, makeup, all that all adds up. So that's another way to kind of, you know, negotiate and be creative with these different types of agreements. And we talked about micro and macro influencers. At least in my experience, I feel like a lot, and particularly with COVID happening, it was on its way there before, but a lot of brands seem to be moving toward micro influencers because, you know, we micro influencers are more in tune with our audience. We have engagement and people believe and trust us and know that it's not just a check. We actually may be using the product. What is your thoughts on, you know, the transition from micro to macro influencers? From macro to micro.
I'll say it again. I think it comes down to authenticity. I think micro influencers, that authentic factor is just much more present, right? Because it's a smaller community, which probably cultivates a bit more trust, and that, you know, there's this sentiment of like, this person really rocks with us and would not lead us astray, versus, you know, macro influencers, when you start to amass an audience of millions, question is, are you really in line with what most people want, and are you really going to speak authentically to things that they're looking for? Like, if you think of sort of like a product perspective, is your audience then too big to really capture what each segment may want? And so I think micro influencers get you there, because by nature of having a smaller audience, there's probably a community of people who are all aligned, and so they know that, like, when you say I bangs with this product, or, you know, I think that this is something that you guys should try, it probably is a high likelihood that they'll like it, because there's more similarities between this smaller cluster of people as opposed to like millions of people with different preferences. So again, it always comes down to authenticity.
Let's transition here a little bit from, you know, an individual and a brand to business partnering. Do you have any experience in those type of agreements, and is it looked at the same way when you're entering these different types of partnerships?
Yeah, I have worked on, you know, brand to brand collabs before, and I would say a lot of what we talked about, sort of on the individual talent or influencer side,
does map and is applicable here. The main difference is that the stakes are higher. Now, instead of one influencer's creative input and perspective to consider, there's an entire company, right, with clusters of folks opining on what the creative vision of the collaboration should be. And so that requires, you know, much more alignment between both companies. And usually there's a higher monetary value affiliated with the collaboration, just because it's a different playing field, right? And I think even more with these brand-to-brand scenarios, it's so important that it map up and align well, right? And I know it's kind of amorphous. It's an amorphous statement to make because, like, what does that mean? There's no formula for it. But you it's kind of like you know it when you see it, when you see, like, ah, this brand mapping well with this one, and it's organic and it makes sense. It's so important because at that level of play, there's much more for each brand to lose. They probably each have a super large audience, consumer base. There's going to be more money on the line. Everything is a little bit more amplified. So the core provisions will be similar, but I think that the investment and the success of it, and of course I'm generalizing, but generally that investment is at a higher level.
That definitely makes sense. So how do you think in that case a brand would measure the success of a brand campaign or a partnership?
Yeah, I think it really depends on each individual brand, like what that brand is, right? So it could be impressions, how many eyes did they get on the partnership? It could be downloads if it's a digital product. If it's something tangible or like merchandise, it could be sales. It really depends on what the brand is, right? In the sense of what's the product, what's the service offering, and how does that brand measure the success of their business? A very easy way to assess the success of a collaboration is to just check in with the press, right? I think there's two angles here. The first of which is how much is either brand trying to publicize the collaboration or the partnership? Because, you know, you'll see that there'll be a lot of media around certain collaborations, which is an indication that the brands are super excited and think that this is going to be great and are much more satisfied with the marriage, as opposed to if there's little media coverage and the brand wasn't intentional about pumping the collab, could be an indication of, like, they had a contractual obligation to finish it, but maybe they weren't really happy with the end product and what came out of it. And then I think another way in line with it, looking into the press, is seeing how the audience received the collaboration. And I mean, that's honestly not just limited to press. You can also, you know, kind of throw social media in there to an extent, but seeing how did their customers or their member base receive this? What's the sentiment on the interwebs about this collaboration? So those are two ways that you can kind of get at a success metric, really just by eyeballing what you see out in the world.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any brand to brand campaigns that really stuck out to me that I really like. I think maybe the first one that comes to the top of my head was the Tidal Mercedes-Benz partnership. Because I love Tidal, love Black-owned businesses, of course, as we've mentioned before. And just the sound quality, as a music lover, I love it. And so I know that this is an electric car, everybody drives it, but having that Tidal app just readily available on your dashboard, not necessarily having to use Apple CarPlay, was something that I thought was really great. Is there a business-to-business brand partnership that you think that really made sense that you like?
That's a good question. I'm
still thinking too, like, is there anything else I really like? You know, another one, now that you said, you know, mostly talent, the businesses and business ones probably seem to fail. I think maybe A-Life and Urban Outfitters, they have been in the news lately for their partnership with HBCU collaboration hoodie. And, you know,
people were, you know, Black Twitter just was not having it because Urban Outfitters, you know, their history that they've been accused of appropriation, but having a Hampton University sweatshirt and I think they had Howard. I don't remember what other schools. I just paid attention to Hampton because I went to Hampton. You know, initially I was like, oh, side-eyeing it, Urban Outfitters, y'all at it again. But, you know, at first I thought about buying the hoodie because it's a Champion hoodie and, you know, Champion, it has good quality. But then someone was like, no, you can't buy it. You know, I'm reading the comments to see how people will feel if I bought this hoodie. And people are like, no, it's more appropriation from Urban Outfitters. But then someone came out and said one of the founders of A-Life was a Black man who went to Hampton. Now, I don't know if this is true. I tried to fact check it. So I looked up articles of who the founders were, and I looked at their links, and I could not confirm that fact. So I ultimately didn't buy the hoodie. I know that they pointed to this person who allegedly went to Hampton, but I just was like, you know what? Let me stay away from this. So maybe business to business. All that to say, maybe business to business clams are.
Yeah, hard. I mean, that if you have a history of like appropriating, you know, maybe appropriating Black culture in particular, maybe the HBCU collab is not you.
I think that we gave our budding influencers, Black creatives, a good basis to work with when they're looking at these brand campaigns. Like, obviously, in this landscape of COVID, things are changing and constantly changing. They're not the same as they once were. You know, we'll see how things continue to develop. But, you know, we told them they should definitely pay attention to the actual services that they're providing, the termination clause, the force majeure. What else?
Jump in. Okay. FTC disclosure on media posts.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think most people recognize that the FTC will come after them.
And what is the FTC for people who don't know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the Federal Trade Commission, right? So the federal agency that regulates advertising. So the disclosure required is to disclose the fact that there's some type of commercial relationship between brands. Now, commercial relationship isn't just hashtag. If they give you
product. Yes, that is so important. Yes. Break this part down. Yes.
If they give you product or merchandise or anything that's like valuing time, like creating services, that creates a commercial relationship. And so whenever you're posting about the brand. So that's why on Instagram you'll see hashtag ad, right? Or the paid geotag. And you know, whenever I'm like analyzing this from a legal perspective, I take a step back and I just think of myself as a consumer, right? So me as someone buying something, if I see a person saying like, hey, I got this product, it's amazing, you should try it, I want to know if that person was paid to say that, right? Like I want the context so that I can assess whether or not that is an authentic and like unbiased testimonial, or if like, you know, maybe they were paid to say this. So it's something to always keep in mind, because you will see on Instagram, and I see it all the time, people do not disclose the fact that they're in business or have a commercial relationship with the brand, and yet they'll be posting about the brand. You'll see it up there frequently. And you know, you can play with how you want to disclose it, because there's different ways to make it clear, and there's a little bit of guidance that the FTC provides. But the bottom line is, you gotta disclose it, because what I think a lot of creatives don't realize is that the FTC can, and sometimes they will come after the individual creative or influencer who has not adequately disclosed a commercial relationship between themselves and a brand. So within the purview of the FTC's like governing authority, they can come after the influencer, the brand,
And to the extent a creative agency is involved, they can come after the agency as well. But, you know, the onus is very much so on the influencer to make sure that they're disclosing this commercial relationship and all their social posts with respect to that brand.
Even if you don't know what to write, you can always put in your contract with the brand that they need to provide you with the proper FTC disclosure to put on your Instagram post or story, and across social media platforms. It needs to go on every platform that you are promoting the company. And I think that was a great rewind, Daniela, because sometimes influencers try to be like, I'm just posting, like I'm not a marketing, I'm not an advertiser. Well, you are now that you got paid cash or product or whatever else you are. So you have that obligation to let us lay consumers know that this is not just something that you're posting just because you use it. If you are posting it just because you use it and you have no payment of any type, then you don't have to post that, correct?
Yeah, the general rule is that if you got paid in some form, right, you got cash, you got merchandise, even if they call it a gift, you receive something from a brand, value in kind, or you traded services, you gotta disclose that there's a commercial relationship. You didn't get paid, you didn't get anything, no gift, nada. There's no requirement for disclosure. Those are just like the general, guiding or basic principles here. There are of course caveats, but that's the main takeaway. Paid, disclose, unpaid, you should be fine. And one more tip I wanna put out there is that the FTC has social media disclosure guidelines up on their website. If you literally, you can just Google FTC social media disclosure and it should pop up, right? And you guys can Google.
I always say it takes nothing to Google.
It's free.
Google.
The Google is super useful. That could just be a starting point. And also, like, read your agreements, right? Like, yes, you might only get a layperson's takeaway from it, but you'll get the gist of what's happening.
Who needs an alarm in the morning when McDonald's has sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and a breakfast cutoff? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You don't have to touch a legal agreement with, like, a 10-foot pole. You can read it and vaguely, or not even vaguely, and start to understand the concepts. So don't be afraid to shy away, don't be afraid to dig in. Don't feel like you have to shy away from trying to understand, what some of these agreements are saying or some of these, like, guiding legal principles, because trust me, you can understand the overarching principle of what's happening if you just read it.
And get an attorney ahead of time. It is much easier to enter a contract than to get out of a contract. So just ask for help ahead of time. That might increase your fee that you asking a brand for, right?
Listen, it might increase your fee, but it might get you more money, right? Because your lawyer, your advocate could press the brand or whoever you're working with to throw you a little bit more coins. Always remember that.
Let's just do the rundown again for them. I know I jumped ahead of myself, but Daniela gave you guys really great points with the FTC. So if you're negotiating these agreements and you don't hire an attorney, which we do not recommend, and remember, we are not your attorneys, make sure that you read the agreement, whether you have an attorney or not. I always tell people, read the agreement. So when I was in private practice, sometimes I used to do, little errors in the agreement because I told my client to read it. And if they didn't mention the error to me, I was like, hey, in this section, I misspelled this word. And it was important for you to read it because I wanted you to point it out to me. And I let everybody know previously, like, my business was based on education and protection of Black people and ownership. And so I'm not just going to draft your agreement, I'm going to talk to you about the agreement and why I made these changes. And so, you know, that was something that I used to do to make sure that they did their part.
I like that. But again, I'm going to do it probably. But I like that. Dropping in like a little nugget, like, did you back?
Right. Because don't come back to me later and ask me questions. But no, yeah, so while we're not your attorneys, and this is not legal advice, this is just our opinion based on our experiences, we think that, you know, maybe you should obviously, again, read the contract, but consider termination provisions, figuring out what those services are, look at the force majeure clause, what else?
Also, figure out the length of time you're comfortable with the brand using your likeness, right? So, or any other IP rights that you're granting a license to, figure out how long you're comfortable with that usage.
Whatever that time frame is, do they have to take down the content after that campaign done or after the contract expires? And how long is the contract? Yeah, the term of the contract. So contract for multiple years, does it expire or terminate after the agreement or campaign ends?
Also, creative approval rights. Do you have the rights to provide feedback on the materials that come out of the partnership? Do you have the right to use those materials?
Yeah. And can they edit the content, or do they have to post it like you gave them? Are they giving you creative briefs before you create the content? How many times can they make you reshoot the content? So yeah, that I think that's something that's important. You want to limit to how many times can they reshoot. Is there one freebie? And then if there's two, then they have to pay you for those additional reshoots if it's not your fault for not following their directions or something like that. We've given them a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we said it, we're not your lawyers, but I'll take the legal fee for the value of the breakdown we're giving you in this episode. Also, one thing to add is be on the lookout for exclusivity provisions, right? Like, is the brand trying to prohibit you from working with its competitors? And are you cool with that? Again, for your fee, does that make sense for you to not have those business opportunities? Are you being paid for the, like, the loss of that, like the opportunity cost of that? So, you know, be thoughtful about exclusivities or non-competes.
So with that said, Daniela, I appreciate you coming on the show, being our second guest in this series. I'm so excited for the new direction of the podcast. And, you know, anytime you want to come on, there's a case or anything that moves your spirit, definitely, you know, reach back out. It's great to, you know, be able to educate Black people. I'm all people, but, you know, a lot of our audience is Black. And, you know, that is our passion. But just to make sure that they are protecting themselves, typically because a lot of times we are not the one to are able to afford legal counsel. So this is our way to kind of give back to our
community. Thank you for having me. This has been great. You know, and I want to say I love that this is a platform, like you said, specifically for Black creatives. What I've found in the entertainment industry is that a lot of entertainers and creatives are Black and brown people, right? But who don't always have the resources or access to get, you know, the legal representation and the legal protections that they really should have. So I know we said here, get a lawyer. To the extent that's not like financially feasible or possible, please use this podcast as a resource and really look for other resources like it to get as much nuggets of knowledge as you can. Because, you know, the reality is we built this, right? And we should be getting our just pay and protection in alignment with that. And the only way to get that is to really bridge this knowledge gap and bridge this gap in access. And I think that this podcast is one of the ways that Black creatives can begin to do that.
So Daniela, before we get out of here, if people want to reach out to you, where can they reach out to you?
You can find me on Instagram. My handle is just the Dan_. I'm not saying slide into my DMs asking me to be your lawyer, but to the extent, like, you know, anyone has mentoring questions or if I can be of assistance in that vein, do feel free to reach out to me there.
And then also just on my LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn is a new Facebook, actually. My LinkedIn is really popping in ways I never expected LinkedIn to be, but you can find me on LinkedIn.
Yes, you guys. So that was our interview with Daniela. I hope you enjoyed it. We gave a lot of great information to our creatives and influencers there who are interested in brand partnerships and are already doing brand partnerships. Just make sure that you are protecting yourself and just being aware of what's going on in the legal side of the business. Again, we appreciate you listening. Make sure you check us out across all platforms and our website, www.poplawpodcast.com. If you ever want to reach out to me, you can reach out at Pop Law Podcast on Instagram or at Desiree_Tally on Instagram. With that said, please remember, we are not your attorney.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
The pandemic has been hard on all our kids. New studies show more than one in three children who started school in the pandemic now need intensive reading help. That's right. Millions of kids in kindergarten through third grade in the United States cannot read at grade level. Here's the good news. Your child can be reading in just 30 days, guaranteed, with Hooked on Phonics. Even if your child has been struggling, Hooked on Phonics will teach your child to read in just 30 days, guaranteed. And right now, you can get started for just $1. Text the word GRADE to 323232 right now. Hooked on Phonics is highly effective and incredibly fun, and everything can be done right from home and in less than 20 minutes a day. For more than 30 years, Hooked on Phonics has been the proven learn-to-read program that kids love to use. Text GRADE to 323232 and teach your child to read in just 30 days, guaranteed. Text GRADE to 323232 right now and get started for just $1. Text GRADE to 323232 now. Text GRADE to 323232.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.